Doctor Who, Rose, Disc 4. Chapter 16, The Battle of London. Jackie heard a huge smash, leapt out of her skin. She turned around to see that some idiots dressed as shop window dummies had broken open their windows, now hacking away at the remaining shards. I've seen that on TV, she thought. A shock turned to laughter. Sugar glass. That glass is made of sugar. Thin sheets of sugar, easy to break. But why would anyone do that? In every shop? She yelped as the windows of the shop to her right caved in, smashed apart by tall female dummies in sharp black clothes. Jagged teeth of glass fell from their frames, biting down onto the pavement, shattering into splinters. To her left, another smash, a range of high-fashion dummies breaking free. Further down the street, another storefront was being trashed, and another, and another. And she focused on the glass rather than the dummies, because that's not sugar, she thought. That's heavy. That's sharp. That's real. A young red-haired man was yelling, furious. The falling glass had cut his arm, his sleeve ripped open on the bicep, blood on his jacket. He aimed his fury at a tuxedo-dressed dummy marching stiffly towards him. He'd sue, yelled the red-haired man. He'd take them to court. He'd get compensation. Jackie was just thinking, I could help you with that. She even reached for the compo papers in her denim bag. Then she saw the tuxedo dummy raise its hand, the hand flattening into a blade, even as Jackie watched, a blade that it lifted up and then swung down on the head of the helpless red-haired man. Jackie Tyler screamed. Then she ran for her life. For the first time that night, Bad Wolf were having a good laugh. They'd reached Old Compton Street. A row of cafes, bars and pubs, all bright, busy and buzzing, none of them hosting dummies in its windows. Except one. They'd been standing outside, what Patrice called a gentleman specialist, telling Mook he should go inside and treat himself, when some sort of publicity stunt happened right in front of their eyes. A shiny white shop window mannequin with exaggerated musculature, naked except for a studded harness and black leather pants, suddenly turned to face them. They all leapt and then laughed. Oh my God, he's real, said Sally. He's looking at you, Mook, laughed Patrice. You're in there. I wish, said Mook. But then the model pulled back its arm and swung it round in a karate chop. The window shattered. Patrice, Sally and Mook jumped back, shielding their heads, yelling out. As they recovered, they saw the dummy and its two companions, one head to toe in black leather, the other dressed only in Speedos, stepped down from the window, kicking the remaining glass into the street. You idiots, said Sally. You could have killed someone. She was interrupted by a stocky, bald, bearded man in a white T-shirt and leather waistcoat running out of the shop, the owner, presumably, and heading for Patrice, the tallest and presumably the one to blame. The man yelled at him. What the hell do you think you're doing? Patrice just bolted, and the man turned to see the plastic threesome stepping towards him. They all stared, dumbstruck, as the harness dummy lifted its hand, and they saw the hand change shape, the fingers fusing to become something new, a hard, jagged blade. And suspended in that second, they all began to notice the intrusion of noises from far off. Sirens in the distance, smashes, glass breaking, brakes screeching, the yells and screams of men and women, the whole world around them going mad somehow as the dummy in front of them raised its new hand above its head. The shop owner stood his ground, blazing with anger. You'll have to pay for that window. The dummy swung its arm down. Patrice, Mook and Sally flinched, gasped, horrified. And then they began to run. Clive was studying his notebook. Thinking he should differentiate between his twos and his sevens, perhaps going continental with the latter, so he just muttered, yes, in a minute, when Michael and Ben told him to look. But then Caroline let go of his arm, complaining, honestly, I could give someone a heart attack. Clive looked up. The shop window dummies were moving. The Finch family had been walking past a display extolling the great outdoors. Dummies dressed in cagoules, high-vis jackets, and climbing boots. And now, the dummy at the front, male probably, but with no face, his head a stylized blank globe, was looking without eyes from right to left. Either side of him, two mountaineer dummies stepped forwards. In the next window, three globe-headed female dummies in jogging outfits turned to face out. Ben and Michael were laughing.
"Are there people dressed up?"
said Michael. Except Clive was looking at the neck. The absence of a neck, the globe heads were joined to the shoulders by a thin rod barely an inch thick. There couldn't be anyone inside those clothes, which meant it was robotics, somehow.
"That's clever," said Caroline.
But now Clive looked down the entire street. He saw pedestrians all the way along, stopping, laughing, pointing. Every shop, every window containing dummies, coming alive. And now in sudden coordination, every dummy in every window lifted its arm and swung down. Row upon row of glass shattered, bright chips cascading to the floor. All along the street, people screamed, yelled, some still laughing. Caroline said, "Well, that's not very funny." And she grabbed hold of the boys to pull them back. But Clive was staring with horror and yet with delight, because he remembered in his files, in those mad old stories of monsters from Loch Ness and wizards in Cornwall and robots at the North Pole, there had been tales from long ago, fables about shop window dummies coming to life and attacking people. A slaughter, so the secret files said. A massacre on the streets of England. Hushed up ever since by the powers that be, the population, doped and duped into forgetting. And Clive, even Clive, had read those stories and thought, how can that possibly be true? But here it is, he thought, it's happening again. Which meant the doctor was true. Every word of him and her and them, all Clive's fantasies were now becoming facts right before his eyes. But if the glories were true, then so were the terrors. And Clive felt a chill in his heart as he watched the plastic army step down into the street. He turned to his wife and children. He said, "Run!" Caroline stared at him, more scared by the look in his eyes than by the dummies. He said quietly, "I'll try to stop them. Now, for the love of God, run!" And Caroline at last believed. She looked at her husband for one last time and said, "I love you." Then she took hold of the boy's hands and ran. Clive faced the dummies, their leader in a bright orange waterproof, an incongruous bobble hat on top of its globe head, walked towards him, eyeless and yet aware. To protect his wife and children, Clive simply opened up his arms. He would greet the dummy in friendship, or stop it with his body, whatever it took. And he found himself smiling, even as he started to cry, because here it was at last. Adventure. The dummy straightened its arm, pointing at Clive, and the plastic hand morphed into a long, thin barrel, like a gun. But Clive Finch stood his ground, anything to buy his family a few more seconds. He held his breath and puffed out his chest and closed his eyes. Somewhere, in the back of his head, he thought, like father, like son. Then the back of his head was gone. Far away, beneath the city, Rose looked up. She thought she could hear the terror on the streets. Screams, sirens, gunshots. Her mother was out there somewhere. Her mother and everyone she knew with an Auton army on the march. But then the Nestine bellowed, forming another two syllables with its red plastic maw. It said, "Dock," and then "Tor." On the ledge below, the Auton, holding the file, stood back and its twin began to push the doctor forwards. Towards the edge. The doctor struggled, gasped, dug his heels in, but the Auton was remorseless. The Nestine below widened its awful mouth in anticipation. Its rage battered Rose's mind, hammering ideas into her thoughts. It said feast, it said sacrifice, it said revenge. And one more word. What was it? Absorb. It would absorb the doctor. And with him, it would gain everything he knew about time and space. The TARDIS would come under Nestine control. The massacre spreading across London would roll on forever and outwards into the stars. Rose sank down, helpless, to hug poor sobbing Mickey. There was nothing she could do. She'd never felt so small. One stupid girl in the middle of a war, trapped underneath a burning city with entire galaxies pivoting around this moment, and she was tiny, infinitesimal, useless. The Auton pushed. The Doctor was forced closer to the edge.